Hey everyone, Kendrick and Josh here. If you're listening to this, you're hearing an old episode we uploaded to the feed that was recorded prior to joining forces with the Last of the Action Heroes podcast network. You can listen to these old episodes and hear how the Star Trek connection and our Willis ranking system came to be. You can find out how Josh's oven works, hear us make mistakes, and get corrected repeatedly.
If you're loving this, we'd love for you to also check out other podcasts on the network, since they're all great. If you're interested in finding out more about this particular podcast, head on to williswaypod.com for more info, or email us at williswaypod@gmail.com. Thank you for listening, and enjoy.
The year is 1989. First commercial dial-up internet connection in North America is made. The Berlin Wall falls, and Bruce Willis has his second film open in as many months. Look who's talking!
One, two, three, hit it, boys!
So get together, have a few laughs.
Uh-oh! Shit, lady, do I sound like I'm ordering a pizza?
Wait, put the freaking gun down on the ground right now, take your shot across the freaking street, and say until he's gonna get you!
Hello, and welcome to Where There's a Willis, There's a Way, a film podcast about the multitude of works by Bruce Willis. My name is Josh Carter, and with me as always is...
Kendrick Martin.
So, today we're going to be talking about the movie Look Who's Talking, and Bruce Willis in particular. We're going to wrap up by doing our regular Wheel of Willis, and then rank this among the other movies that we've talked about.
But before we get to that, Josh, this is our fifth episode, last movie set in the 80s. Have there been
last movie that came out in the 80s. I don't know if he's got other movies.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point.
To the 80s.
That's a good point. Last movie released in the 80s.
Yes. Yeah.
Have there been any, like, standout moments? Do you think the 90s are Bruce Willis's most well-known decade? Are most of his bangers in the 90s?
That's a really good question, because obviously Die Hard is probably the thing that he's most well known for, but a lot of the movies that I think people think about are 90s movies, like isn't the Fifth Element in the 90s?
Yep.
And so is Pulp Fiction.
What's the asteroid movie?
Armageddon.
Oh yeah. Oh, Armageddon. Yep, I think that's in the
90s. I don't want to betray my thoughts on that movie, but what the fuck?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been fun. I'm excited to see kind of how it evolves from here. Obviously, like, up until about 93, it was like the 80s 2.0 as far as pop culture goes. So it'll be kind of interesting to see where it goes from here.
Yeah. And this podcast has been a great way to explore some of these movies that I'm never really familiar with. We talked last time about In Country and talked a lot about how great that movie was. And it's of the movies we've reviewed so far, it's like probably been the most one that I've thought about later. And when I talk to other people about my experiences kind of doing this podcast, that's definitely one that stuck out to me.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like Blind Date especially is just pretty disposable. And then everything else has been worth talking about to some extent. So I'm really happy that I got to watch In Country. I think that was a very worthwhile pit stop in Bruce Willis's career. And I think that if you're a big fan of Bruce Willis, you probably should watch it. I think it's a good watch.
I agree. I of all that we've seen so far, that's definitely one I would recommend people see if they haven't seen.
Speaking of In Country, we also wanted to issue a correction on that. Last episode, I said that Bruce Willis won a Golden Globe for that, and he did not. He was nominated for a Golden Globe. So, kind of fluffing up our boy a little bit too much, apparently. So, just wanted to correct that.
Bruce Willis has a long and storied career involving a lot of awards, so we're not really stripping him of too much credibility, but...
No.
I think if I could go back and award an award, though, I would give a Golden Globe to him in country.
I probably would as well, but I have to go look up and see who actually got it that year, and I will decide.
Good point.
Because maybe it was somebody that did a really great job, I don't know.
Yeah, we have to be careful with how we meddle with history.
Yeah, that's true. Man, if I get a time machine, boy, will I go back and not change that. That'd be pretty low on my list, I feel. Oh, Dustin Hoffman got it for Rain Man. But, I mean, who even talks about that movie anymore? Not me. I don't know.
Yeah, the Dustin Hoffman podcast, Dustin Around... is probably shaking in their boots right now.
Dusting off the old podcast.
We'll have to workshop that one.
Yeah.
If you have any suggestions on what a Dustin Hoffman podcast should be called, you can tweet at us, @WillisWayPod, or email us to nevertalkaboutdustinhoffmanagain @WillisWayPod@gmail.com.
Also, before we got started with everything else, I just wanted to say thank you to everybody. We reached 100 listens in total, so thank you, everybody. Let's move on to talking about Look Who's Talking.
It's the most natural thing in the world.
No.
Yes.
No. What? How could this have happened?
I take it this wasn't a planned pregnancy.
It's a beautiful, magical experience.
St. Jerome's Hospital.
John Travolta. Oh,
come on, breathe deep. Try to help me just try.
Kirstie Alley.
Give me some drugs. Oh, thank you a really lot.
Now that is a little more like it. Hey, here's Mr. Hand here. Wow.
And Bruce Willis as the voice of Mikey.
Help! Put me back in! Put me back in!
So you're the one that's been kicking me.
The one that ate all that spicy food.
That was from the trailer of Look Who's Talking. I'm going to read the IMDb description. After a single, career-minded woman is left on her own to give birth to the child of a married man, she finds a new romantic chance in a cab driver. Meanwhile, the point of view of the newborn boy is narrated through voiceover. This movie is available on Hulu, and as always, we will be spoiling what amounts to a plot for this movie.
So if you really care about the plot for Look Who's Talking, go check yourself into a doctor and watch that movie and then come back and listen to this podcast.
Before we jump too far into the weeds, Josh, what was your thoughts on Look Who's Talking?
You know, I expected this movie to be like really, 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 really bad. And I actually thought that it was... not that bad. I thought that it was bonkers. Like, few other movies. But I didn't hate it. And I kind of hate that I didn't hate it.
Me too. I had visions of me not being able to finish this movie. But yeah. I laughed quite a bit while watching it.
Yeah, same. I was like ashamed thinking about it and where it goes on my list. We're going to talk about that later. But I was going, oh no, I like this movie, I think. And had you seen it before, or was this your first time watching it?
This was my first time. For some reason, I had in my head that this was the movie with the dancing CGI baby clip from the Super Bowl commercial. Are you familiar with what I'm talking about?
No, I'm not.
It is called The Dancing Baby and was a viral video in the 1990 Super Bowl. Oh, yeah. It was part of Ally McBeal. But in my head, I was thinking, oh, this movie involves a voiceover baby. That must be the same thing. but to find out that there was multiple CGI babies taking place within the same few years. What was going on in the 90s or late 80s?
Did just the cinema going world have baby fever? Is that what was going on?
Oh, yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I am baffled that this movie got made, and like, I feel like on so many different levels, people should have said no to this movie. And it just kept getting yeses, and it's like, how does this movie get made?
Yeah, I think this is maybe the first one we've talked about not based on a book.
Yeah, yeah. You know it. How would this have been as a book? Like, what would? Oh, I feel like it would have been so much worse as a book.
I think what sells it for me is the comedic chemistry between all of our leads, including somewhat Bruce Willis. But I think Bruce Willis, yeah, more so than any movie we've seen, he plays such a minor role. We'll get to that when we talk about him specifically. But
yeah,
So while watching this movie, I had a notebook and I was going to take, you know, some stream of conscious thoughts. And the opening scene of just ridiculously animated internal organ shots.
Yes.
My notes consisted of a giant WTF.
Yeah, I think I also wrote down notes, and I just wrote for that one sequence, I hate this use of the Beach Boys song, because I don't think I will ever be able to hear I Get Around without thinking about that stupid fucking scene. And stupid fucking scene, actually.
Ooh, hey.
And hey, that's our pun limit clock off for the day, folks. That was so insane. I feel like that is a good start for this movie, though. Not that it's a good sequence, and by any means, but it really helps set the tone for the rest of the movie that, hey, you know, strap yourself in. This is going to be a nightmare, but you're going to have fun and you'll probably laugh along the way. So that was how I felt. I felt like I was trapped in a vaguely scary and ridiculously bonkers dream throughout this movie.
I agree. And I thought, you're right. It definitely gives you the expectation level. It doesn't start with a bunch of great actors acting and then switch to a CGI fetus with Bruce Willis's voice talking about his thumbs. It starts you out with what it's going to be and never really lets up.
Yep. Yeah. And that's probably the best choice that they could have made, because if this started out like a regular movie and then all of a sudden it went to that, I think it would be very tonally jarring. But at least it's consistent all the way through, and that does help. One thing that I was constantly thinking to myself is, why does this baby need to be talking? Because like, the actual love story between the two leads, I think, is really fun to watch. But the talking baby is like, I feel so unneeded, but maybe I am, maybe that's just me. Did you feel like the baby needed to be talking, or were you in my boat as well?
See, I was the complete opposite. I thought that if they had no internal monologue of the baby, this movie would have been so boring.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's interesting. I mean,
but both John Travolta and Christy Alley's performances I found compelling. But I think so much of their comedy relied on kind of confiding to the baby their feelings for one another. Because there's not really anybody. Like, there's John Travolta's dad and then there's Christy Alley's coworker slash friend, but we never really seen either of those people confiding their thoughts in one another, and they're not mm-hmm. given an internal monologue. So there would be nothing to bounce off of except each other if we didn't have the baby to talk to, and then Bruce Willis having the comedic interactions helps keep it light and moving along.
I mean, I guess I agree just from like a storytelling perspective, but I don't know. I still did not find that the baby worked for me. I thought that it was by and large an obstacle to the rest of the story that was being told.
Fair enough. You're allowed an opinion. One of the things I noticed in the beginning, especially, and I think this kind of picked up as it went along, but the way it was set and lit felt over cheesy, even for the setting it was in. So we've talked about in previous movies about kind of the over-the-top business aspects of the 80s and that kind of business mumbo-jumbo that a lot of those 80s movies are kind of filtered through, because that was general business people doing business things was such an element of the time.
Yeah.
But the lighting and the sets felt like they were cardboard, and you could have just pushed any of those things over. And I don't know what the budget for this movie was, but I have to assume with a fairly well-known cast that it couldn't have been a small budget. So I guess they could have just spent all that money on the actors.
Yeah, I don't know. I do not know that answer. But yeah, I do agree that like generally as far as the set and lighting goes, it did feel pretty low budgety, but it wasn't like distractingly low budget in my opinion.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And to the movie's credit, you see a lot of different settings in this movie. You have that ridiculous office that the baby's father has, which is first like Art Deco with that jukebox in the background with the neon lights and all the other ridiculous stuff. And he's like, I'm going to swap all this out for a massive painting and a rug and all this other art. Meanwhile, Christy Alley is like trying to struggle with the baby and the stroller and all that other elements of putting stuff together.
Yeah, I think that a lot of the writing on this was great, and the directing and the acting too. Because, like, nobody in this movie is taking it super, super, super seriously. They're all playing pretty broad characters. And that, I think, kind of helps the movie around. Like, I don't think really anybody's giving a subtle performance in this movie. But it all works because the movie's so bonkers. And because everybody's on the same page. It very easily could not. And I'm interested to see if the second movie, which we're going to review later, is going to not work, because maybe one of those elements will be lost. Or maybe it'll be something completely different. Maybe I will end up liking it. Who knows?
Yeah, possibly. What did you think of the performance by John Travolta?
I thought that he was really, really great. I thought he was so much fun in his role, and I actually did some research on this later, and he and Kirstie Alley have been like lifelong friends since this movie came out, because they enjoyed working with each other so much, and I really do feel like their chemistry has a very genuine feel to it, and a genuine warmth to it as well. So I thought that he just did great in this movie. I cannot think of a single fault from his performance. I think he is so much fun to watch. he comes off as really convincing and genuine and heartfelt while still playing this very broad, ridiculous, tropey character. And I think that this movie probably wouldn't have worked without him. Not that it would have worked without Kirstie Alley, because she's also doing an amazing job, but I feel like it wouldn't have worked without him as well. What about you?
I agree. I thought he did a really good job. I believe this is quite a few years after Grease, and I'm surprised at how young he still looks here.
Yeah.
He works really well as kind of, like, he portrays just the nicest guy. He takes care of his dad. He is a great caretaker for Mikey, the baby. He teaches flying. He drives a cab. I think it could have been really easy to write him out as, like, kind of a dude bro who's nice-ish. We see Kirstie Alley's character go on a series of dates while she's trying to find kind of a partner, as she realizes she needs a father for the baby. And one of my favorite parts of the movie is every time she goes on a date, you see her kind of envision what life would be like with that date in the future. And it is just a ridiculous kind of fantastical dream sequence-esque vision. And I thought that was all really clever and funny and really enjoyable.
Yeah. Did you actually look up the cast list for the movie? Because her dates have names and they're pretty great, actually.
I did not.
So the first person that she goes out with, he is credited as Mr. Impatience. And the second person she goes out with is credited as Mr. Anal. And then the doctor who gives her the drugs is credited as Drug Doctor. So, you know, you get like your cast list and you go, all right, I know what I'm doing in this movie. So it's, I thought that was pretty clever. This movie is in no way taking itself seriously.
No, I think that's much to the movie's credit. That date, that final date she goes on where the guy is just like, oh, she's an independent woman. She's going to pay for everything. And I'm just going to talk about my incontinence or whatever his like disgusting conversation was.
Yeah, that was ridiculous, but it was ridiculous in kind of the perfect way. I do feel like maybe I should clarify too, is that maybe a lot of this movie doesn't take itself seriously, but the writing is pretty well done and they do set up some pretty good stuff, but there are some threads that are just randomly dropped and added to and stuff like that. So I think the moment to moment writing was pretty great, but the overall plot maybe needed a little bit of cleaning up. Like, there's a bit where John Travolta's like, oh, yeah, drive airplanes. And then later he's like, I drive airplanes. And then they go up in an airplane, and then that's it. And you really, I don't know that you really needed to go see him go to the airport during that one sequence. And then you get in the pun about the boobs and how they're jumbo sized, and which a baby says, by the way, so it's got an extra level of weirdness.
Yeah, stuff taking place in the airplane, both that and the scene where she gives the flying lesson, is probably the most cringy, the cringiest moments in this movie. Which, for a movie that's 30 plus years old, is not a terrible for comedy to only have like a modicum of cringe. I looked up the writer of this movie, and she, Amy Heckerling, and she wrote
also the director.
Yes. Yeah. And she wrote the sequel, Look Who's Talking To. But she also wrote on a Muppets episode. And she wrote for the TV show Clueless. And the movie Clueless. But I think those, if you're familiar with Clueless, or I think I would say Muppets in general, like a lot of that comedy kind of translates over really well.
Yeah, I'd agree. Speaking of Muppets, is that fetus at the beginning a Muppet? Is it a puppet? What is it? It was so creepy.
That's a good question. I assumed it was like computer animated, but it could have been animatronic. I don't think it was a puppet, but I could be way off.
Oh my god.
I didn't see any.
It was so creepy.
Yeah. I was kind of worried that because I had not seen this movie and I didn't have any idea of what it was about. I was kind of worried the whole movie would be pregnant her and we'd just be hearing Bruce Willis dialogue inside the womb, and we'd have to stare at that animatronic fetus the whole time. I was like real ready to bail, but
oh yeah.
Fortunately,
but no, thankfully this movie does a 9-month time jump, and then it does another like time jump as well right yeah. after that.
Yeah, I have questions about that when we get to Bruce Willis's performance.
no kidding. My entire house was watching it at that point. We were all just like, what is going on? How old is this kid?
Yeah.
What? Yeah, it was nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah. One other thing that I thought was pretty silly about this movie is like the seasoned actor playing an ancient man trope, which is where you get somebody who is like in their late 50s, 60s, something like that, and you go, all right, you're gonna be playing a guy who's 160, we're gonna put old age makeup on you, we're gonna put big giant bushy eyebrow on you. And I want you to play like you are a million years old. And it definitely has that in this. And the John Travolta's dad's character, he's just constantly like, I don't know what's going on. And it's so ridiculous. It's just, it's amazing, but it is terrible at the same time.
I thought that was a really good payoff, that whole plot point, because Bruce Will or John Travolta basically says, yeah, I need to come over because I'm pretending I live here in order to get my grandpa into a assisted living home. And I was like, oh, that's just, you know, plot reason as to why he needs to be there. But then we go to the assisted living home and see the grandfather repeatedly. Mm-hmm. And then there's the final scene where Mikey like escapes and runs through Manhattan.
Yeah.
I thought that was all really like a really interesting payoff.
Yeah. I'm not complaining about the writing of the man. I'm just complaining that it's a guy who's playing a character so much older than he is.
You're as old as you because, feel.
Yeah, that's true. So that man just feels like he's 160 years old?
Yeah. Yeah. Hey.
Okay.
Yeah, look inside yourself.
I did, and it's just that horrible scene from the opening, unfortunately.
Ooh, yay.
One other thing I wanted to kind of give people forewarning about is if you watch this on Hulu and you turn the subtitles on because your roommates are like, I want subtitles. We just watched a Christopher Nolan movie and we couldn't hear anything. And so you oblige them and you turn on the subtitles. Whoever had the subtitles job for this movie is, you know, just a really, really getting by on the bare minimum. There's things where somebody will say, hey, for instance, I'm just going to make up a line. But someone would go, you know, I'm actually really tired and I've been wearing these shoes all day and my feet are tired, but the garbage needs to go out. Would you take out the garbage? And then in the Hulu subtitles, it will say, I'm tired. Can you take out the garbage? It is so shorthand. It's bonkers. I don't know how this happened. If this is something official, because it has to be, because it was, all of those are encoded into the movie. So I just don't know who signed off on this and went, yeah, that looks good enough to be. It's just, they don't even try. It's crazy.
Wow. Well, listener, if you're aware of how Hulu's subtitles get generated, you should write in and let us know if they have to backfill some of these old movies or what.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of curious. I almost wanted to Google it and see, but you know, it takes a lot of work. You got to open up a new tab and all that sort of stuff. It's just not worth it oftentimes. Also, we got to see another little alchemy sequence in this movie in a pregnancy test.
Yep.
Now I'll be looking for those every movie that I watch going forward to see when we officially switch to stick method. Because that is something that I'm very curious about.
I am really interested in movie depictions of pregnancy tests. And yeah, when mm-hmm. that cut over from you need a full level alchemy / chemistry degree to yeah. when you could just do it in the bathroom stall at the Burger King. Because I feel like that's a pretty monumental change that I didn't learn about in history class.
Yeah. Yeah, that goes to show history class has got a thing or two to learn. You know, actually, maybe I shouldn't be criticizing just history class in general and say that was a failing of my education personally, but I don't know.
This movie also has what I believe is a Hollywood requirement for any movie dealing with a newborn, and that is someone accidentally pours breast milk into their coffee and then spits it out upon realizing it.
Yeah, and this actually stoked a little bit of a controversy amongst my roommates and I, because as soon as he spat it out, I went, ew, gross, and then everyone else went, you know, actually, milk comes from mammals, and humans are mammals, so it's not actually gross. So that prompted me to bring this up. Kendo, is it gross to drink human breast milk?
I think, yeah, I would probably be unsettled.
Yeah, that was kind of where I was coming at it, too. And then people go, well, you drink cow milk, and I used to milk goats, and I drink goat milk. And then I was comparing it with that scene, and I was like, yeah, but how often is the goat, like, standing in your kitchen going, that's my milk, and looking you in the eye as it says it? So I feel like there's some differences there. But obviously, listeners, please weigh in. Tell me if I'm wrong, and breast milk of human teats should just be used, you know, for the drinking. If maybe I'm wrong about this one, and I really need to broaden my horizons. I'm okay taking the L if that's what needs to happen.
These are the hard-hitting questions we discuss here.
Yeah. we're not talking about, you know, just really, really easy questions like what happens after death. We're talking about the hard-hitting stuff like yeah. breast milk.
Right. Should breast milk be consumed commonly?
Yeah.
Would it make a great coffee creamer?
Yeah, you know, it's these are the important questions to ask.
A couple of thoughts, not really dealing with the movie, but kind of loosely around the movie. Did you know that John Travolta was in a Quibi series?
No.
And this Quibi series is called Die Hart, H-A-R-T, and it stars Kevin Hart, who plays a fictionalized version of himself on a quest to land the action movie role of a lifetime.
Have you watched it?
No, I don't even think you can. I saw this pop up on John Travolta's IMDb page, and I was like, what is Die Hard? And then I clicked on it, and then I was like, well, I still don't understand what this is. And then you go to the trivia section of the IMDb page, and it said, originally written for Bruce Willis, but Willis didn't understand the concept of Quibi and turned it down to be replaced by John Travolta.
Oh man, what I would do to be a fly on that wall in the conversation between some Quibi producer and Bruce Willis.
Yeah,
man. Bruce Willis is like, but what is it? Well, it's like a streaming service that does something in between Vines and a TV show.
Well,
and he's like, why would I want to be a part of this?
Bruce Willis, historically, not a big social media guy, probably didn't even know, like, you know, what's a TikTok? What's an Instagram?
Yeah. Yeah. He doesn't have a Twitter, and I watched a little segment that he did, and he said, yeah, I don't have a social media account because I don't understand it. So he said that himself.
Another aspect was the doctor in the movie's played by an actor named Don S. Davis, who is known for his roles in many science fiction shows. He was in the Stargate universe of films and TV. He was in Twin Peaks, one of my favorite shows, and he was on X-Files.
Interesting.
So always a fun face to see kind of pop up, especially he normally plays a military general of some kind or kind of a gruff leader. And to see him kind of play this goofy doctor, I thought was really funny.
Yeah. You know, speaking of sci-fi shows, it's come to that part in the podcast where we talk about the Star Trek connection.
I was really excited because this one I thought was pretty obvious, but
yes,
there's more. Absolutely. There's more to the story.
There is, yeah. So one of the best Star Trek movies is Star Trek The Wrath of Khan, and that was released in, I want to say, 1982, something like that, sometime in the 80s, and it's great. It kind of reinvigorated the love of Star Trek at the time and spawned several movies after that and is just a lot of fun to watch. I really recommend it if you haven't seen it. But Kirstie Alley was a huge fan of Star Trek growing up, and she got to audition for that movie and got the part of Savick, a Vulcan who may or may not be half Romulan. They say in a deleted scene, but it's not canon. Blah, 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 blah. I think she does a great job in that movie, and she is the most obvious Star Trek connection. Now, she was only that character for one movie, even though that a character appears twice more. And the reason for that is because the people who kind of wrote up the contract didn't really think that there was going to be a whole lot more Star Trek movies. Leonard Nimoy at the time was going, you know, I don't actually want to be in these, so I want to stop doing these. And then he had so much fun on the movie that he decided to come back and do some more. And so Kirstie Alley's contract didn't have anything in it for sequels. So when they asked her to come back for the sequels, she played hardball with them and said, you know, you got to pay me more if I'm going to come back for these. And she asked for supposedly 10 times her original salary is kind of what the unofficial kind of record is on that. And Leonard Nimoy himself has actually said that it was in the DeForest Kelly range, who would have been probably the third highest paid or the fourth highest paid, depending on how much the villain got paid for that movie. And so the studio turned her down and recasted her. So Robin Curtis ended up playing her afterwards and did fine. But I think that it was really a shame that they didn't say, yeah, we'll make that work. The last movie made a lot of money and instead cheated her out of playing it again. Obviously, she could have done it for less money, but it's so ridiculous that you would cast somebody who is so talented and then refuse to pay them kind of what they've earned, I feel. But yeah, that's the Star Trek connection. And I've looked it up, and we are not going to use Kirstie Alley for the second movie. So you'll have to come back and see how Look Who's Talking 2 connects to Star Trek. But it is through a different method.
I'm excited. First, we have to get through Die Hard 2 without picking the oboe player.
Yeah, that's true. I haven't looked at that yet. So we'll see if we're back to our old staple, John Boyd. so good. As far as other casting things go with this movie, Molly's dad, the main character's name is Molly, is actually played by a politician named Ed Koch, and he is the previous mayor of New York City, and he is not one of the Koch brothers, which surprised me because that's what I know the last name from. And he's actually probably the least bad Koch that has ever been involved in politics in America that I could find.
Wow. He's not related to the Koch brothers at all?
Nope. Not at all.
All right.
And I tried Googling that. I was like, Ed Koch, Koch brothers. And then Google was like, shut the fuck up. No results. So Google closed its doors to me. And that is forbidden knowledge if they took a 23andMe test and somehow found out that they are long lost cousins. They have not made that info public.
Wow. Well, okay. It's good to hear.
Yeah. So speaking of casting stuff, there were a lot of other people considered for these roles, especially the guy roles. And I kind of wanted to get your feedback on some of this.
Hit me.
Yeah. So for the voice of Mikey, the little kid, the different actors who were considered were Chevy Chase, Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Steve Martin, and John Candy. Do you feel like this would have made a difference at all if any of them had played it? And do you feel like any of them would have been particularly better or worse?
Before having seen this movie, if you had asked me what I expected Bruce Willis to do, I would not have been able to tell you that he would have been kind of a funny, energetic baby comedian. So it's hard to say, though my gut tells me that John Candy probably would have been great to see, and the rest of them, I think, probably would not have surprised me. I think Bruce Willis is probably the best of the options. Maybe John Candy would have been my only other go-to there.
Yeah, I think I'm the same way. I think that John Candy might have been pretty great, but I think that Bruce Willis did a better job than I was expecting him to do, and I don't think that any of these would have done better than him, especially like Chevy Chase. I think he's pretty overrated. I think he is pretty great in Community, but he is a pain to work with from everything that I've read. And if you're a pain to work with, you have to be probably the funniest person ever in order to be tolerable. And I do not think that he is the funniest person ever. And he kind of gets brought onto a bunch of projects like, oh, we've got Chevy Chase. And I just go,
yep.
Pass.
Yep.
So, yeah. Yeah. And then the second other casting thing was apparently they didn't know that they were going to get Travolta for this movie. And there were several other actors that they had talked about. John Stamos, Michael Keaton, Mel Gibson, Jeff Goldblum, and Griffin Dunne were all considered for the role of James. Do you feel like any of them would have done better, or particularly better or particularly worse than John Travolta?
I think, John Stamos, Michael Keaton, or Mel Gibson could have all done as equally great of a job. I think playing a kind of steady, simple, nice guy, that John Travolta pulls off here, really sold me. I think a Jeff Goldblum would have just been too weird. Like, I've never known Jeff Goldblum to be like a toned down, simple man.
Yeah. Leading man, Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think Mel Gibson would have been a mistake too, but I don't think Mel Gibson is that great. He kind of is a Chevy Chase, but specifically to Jews. So,
oh, don't get me wrong. He's very problematic. very problematic.
Yeah. And actually, speaking of Travolta, this movie is kind of credited with restarting Travolta's career, because obviously he had Grease and that was extremely popular. And then he just went into slog after slog after slog. And then this movie made some money and kind of helped restart him down the path that he went on for a little bit before he went into his second slog, which then, obviously he got rescued by Quibi. So
yeah, it's good to go. He peaked with Quibi's Die yeah. Hard. So,
oh God, part of me really wants to see if I can find a way to watch that.
Yeah, I'm really curious if there's any way to watch any Quibi specials now, because there's got to be some gems out there, but who knows? If you, dear listener, know, email us, willswaypod@gmail.com.
We basically really want emails. That's why we keep saying email us. We're sitting there like a kid who has nothing better to do other than check the mail.
Hey, that is pretty much what I do, both in real life and email.
Yeah.
Speaking of Bruce Willis's kind of upward trajectory, or sorry, John Travolta's upward trajectory, they will meet again in Pulp Fiction, and I'm excited to reconvene there. That's in 1994, so that's a few years away.
Yeah. And they both play the same characters in that movie, so come back to see.
No. Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah. The other thing that I wanted to talk about with this movie is money stuff. So you haven't looked up any of the money stuff for this movie, right?
I have not, no.
Okay. So just to recap, Blind Date had a budget of $18 million. Sunset had a budget of $19 million. Die Hard was $35 million, and In Country was $18 million. So that's kind of whereabouts a lot of those movies were landing. $18, $19 million. Obviously, Die Hard is the outlier. And then this movie budget was $7.5 million. So it's so much lower than those other ones. And you can definitely see it in the set design and the lighting and everything like that. But it blew me away how much lower it was than those other movies.
Yeah, I mean, like I mentioned at the beginning, I could feel the lack of budget.
Yeah.
I saw it had a fairly low Rotten Tomatoes score, and most of the reviews had said kind of what we said. Funny-ish. Nothing too surprising, but I'm curious. I have to assume it easily made back its money, especially at only $7 million.
Yeah, so Kendrick, it did make its money back.
I feel
it
better.
Made back a little bit more than that too. So Blind Date made back its budget about twice over. Sunset famously did not. It made nothing. Made $4.6 million off of its $19 million budget. Die Hard made $142-ish million. off of its $35 million budget. So obviously did great, spawned a bunch of sequels and stuff like that. In Country made $3.5 million and was just a huge bomb. Lost literally $14.5 million if my math is right. This movie made enough money to make up for all of Bruce Willis's box office failures at that point, because it made $297 million.
Wow.
Which is more than twice what Die Hard made.
Wow. Yeah.
On like a fourth of the budget.
This movie, I wouldn't quite call it a four quadrant film. That's like a term that refers to hitting kind of the four quadrants of moviegoers in a draw. So like Marvel movies are often kind of considered four quadrant films because it targets, you know, young adults, kids, families, people going out on dates, whatever. It pretty much targets everyone. And I feel like this movie is close to that. I don't think it's quite family friendly enough, but it's definitely a little more approachable than anything else we've seen as far as kind of like an older kid movie. But that is a lot of money.
It is so much money. They were swimming in money, and it prompted two sequels and a rumored reboot, which is going to come out at some point here soon. And it is also it's also spawned a TV show. And this TV show is called, I believe, Baby Talk. Something like that. It's called something like that. Let me look it up. Look Who's Talking. And this TV show is a spinoff show done in the style of a sitcom. And it is so, so bad. And I would not even be talking about it right now at all. Except for it was available to watch on YouTube. So I watched about half of the first episode. And we've talked about him before, but George Clooney is on it. And he plays like a character. And it's so horrendous. I cannot express to you how bad it is. Something that we haven't even talked about in this movie is that it takes a certain amount of human competence to know what to do when there is a baby in your presence. It's like babies are, I mean, tiny people, obviously, but they're weird. They have different needs than even a 4 or 5 year old has. And just knowing how to act around them is something when you see it happening, you don't notice it. But if somebody just doesn't know what to do with a baby, you really do. And that movie, I felt none of the actors are really great with the baby. And it is painful, amongst other things. The sexual humor is way, way more intense in that show. And Bruce Willis isn't in it, and it shows. It's pretty horrendous.
What year did that come out?
I want to say like 1990s. Let me look it up right now.
So not much later than this movie.
Yeah. Look Who's Talking spinoff. Let's see. Oh my God. Where did he even find out about this thing? I must have found out about it on IMDb. I swear I'm not having a fever dream with this right now. I know that it's a real thing. I definitely watched half of an episode. Oh, man. Wouldn't that be the craziest thing if this is just something that I made up?
Yeah, you dreamed, and someone's listening right now like, I'm going to go make this.
Oh, man. They could take all the credit from it. I don't even care. Okay, yes. Yeah, so it's Baby Talk is what it is, and it went on from 1991 to 1992. And yeah, so George Clooney was in it. It says on the IMDb page, George Clooney also had a small role in the series. And as mentioned, it was the quickest exit he ever took to filming anything.
Wow.
Yep.
Hmm.
Yeah, so good stuff.
That kind of leads me to, there's not a lot specifically to talk about Bruce Willis's performance in general. he obviously recorded all this in a voiceover booth, and I think it feels very obvious that he's just kind of reading pre-written jokes for him that are he's missing a lot of that comedic chemistry and kind of one-on-one interaction that we've seen so far in his movies. But what really takes me out of it is this baby looks too old to not be talking and using its real voice.
Yeah, especially later on in the movie when it's walking around New York and stuff like that.
Yeah, seems very much like a toddler.
Like a 3 or 4 year old.
Yeah,
how is it not able to use its regular human talking voice and not like adult Bruce Willis voice?
Yeah, I am curious as to how they're able to do a sequel where he's the kid has to be a similar age, still not being able to talk.
I don't know. I do not know at all. I'm also really not looking forward to the sequel just because there's a plethora of reasons why I'm not looking forward to the sequel. But yeah, I don't know how they're going to make that work. I don't know why they didn't keep him as a baby now that I think about it.
Yeah, so Mikey, the baby, is played by a lot of different babies in this movie. It's played by a very young baby right after birth, and then a small baby for a little while. And then, you know, the latter half of the movie, an older kid who they claim is still like only a year or a year and a half, but looks much older. And presumably that's because they needed him to be able to walk around and kind of get into hijinks and get lost, which the whole final bit hinges on. But I think they could have easily just kept the middle child, who is very obviously too small to talk, and for the most part of this movie would have been fine.
Yeah, I agree. And it's maybe it was a directing thing where they go, you can't direct a 8-month-old to do anything on a reasonable basis. And that might have been part of it, but IDK.
Yeah, that's possible.
IDK.
There was not a lot of behind-the-scenes writing down on this movie, probably for good reason.
Yeah. You know, I would guess that there's probably a lot of coke involved in the writing of this movie. And not the Ed variety. So,
Ed Coca-Cola.
Ed Coca-Cola, that's right. What did you actually think of Bruce Willis, though?
I thought he was fine. I think he sold me on all the jokes he was telling. But like I said, I never once got the feeling that he wasn't just standing somewhere by a microphone reading a script. There's a few scenes we see where he talks to other babies and they kind of talk back to him. And that's really the only time that there's kind of a lot of one-on-one interaction. There's a few times where one of the adults will say something and he'll respond to it. But for the most part, there's almost no back and forth. And I think that created the feeling that he was given some cards, some lines to read, and he just read those lines and put the right inflection in the right spot, and they called it good. So I think it was fine, but
I thought that it was better than I was expecting. I was expecting more of a smarmy performance from him, and it wasn't too smarmy to where my smarmy meter was overwhelmed.
Smarmy Watch 2021. Stayed in the green. That's a good point. He did a really good earnest, upbeat kid. We've talked a lot, at least I have, about how in doing this movie watch of Bruce Willis's work, you think of modern day Bruce Willis or even later movie Bruce Willis, and he plays kind of a, you know, swarmy, sassy guy. And we've seen some of that, Die Hard especially, but to play a completely earnest, happy, excited, you know, full of joy character, I think is pretty rare for him and his works. And I thought I was sold. I didn't get the feeling that he was doing this for a paycheck. He probably was, but it didn't feel that way.
Yeah, I think Bruce Willis did a pretty decent performance for what was being asked of him. And I thought that it worked well. Enough. I don't want to get ahead of myself. So, speaking of Bruce Willis, it's time to talk about where we would rank this movie in comparison with his other movies. Let's start with you, Kendrick. Where would you rank this movie?
So, I think I would put this at the bottom of my list, number 5.
You would?
Yes.
Okay, interesting. Well, I'm sure it's not going to remain here for long, but I would actually put it at my number 3, I think. I think. I would much rather watch Look Who's Talking than Sunset or Blind Date again, especially Blind Date. I think Blind Date is totally disposable, but I don't think I would. Yeah,
I agree that both Blind Date and Sunset are pretty disposable, but Look Who's Talking, as much fun as I have, I don't think I would willingly want to watch it again.
Yeah. Well, I can respect that opinion.
Well, I think that means it's time for the Wheel of Willis.
Hey. So, Kendrick, do you remember what we say every time we do the Wheel of Willis?
I do, Josh. Do you have
Great.
Do you have the big wheel in front of you?
I do. I've got it all set up on my desk and everything.
All right. You're limbered up, you're ready to spin. I think it's time to
whisk that wheel. And it's been whisked. All right. So, the question for this movie is, how would you rank the outfits worn by this Bruce Willis character? So now what we have to go do is look up what his character wore.
I think there's a scene where it's mentioned, like, the clothes he's wearing, isn't it? Isn't there a scene?
I want to say that there probably is. I definitely think his baseball cap scene is, like, at the end, is probably the cutest that he is throughout that movie.
Yeah. Or there's a scene where he's, like, wearing a classic, like, dino shirt. I think that's all pretty cute.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you're right. The scene where he wears that kind of hoodie and baseball cap look, I thought it was all really great.
Yeah.
Overall, I would say I enjoyed his costumes.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's asking us to rank it, so I'm going to say I give it an A.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's going to wrap up our time for Look Who's Talking. We actually had more to say about the movie than we thought we did. I thought it might just be an old poo-paroo on this movie, but great discussion as always.
Likewise.
I want to remind everyone that if you leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, we will be reading them on air here soon. So leave anything you want. Talk about Look Who's Talking. Talk about the costumes in Look Who's Talking. Do you like baseball caps? And we will always welcome your emails. You can email us at williswaypod@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter at williswaypod. You can follow me personally, Kendrick, on Twitter at kmartinix, K-M-A-R-T-I-N-I-X, or see any other work I've done at kmartinix.com.
And you can follow me, Josh, on Twitter at joshingcarter.
Great. Next time, we are going to be discussing Die Hard 2, our first sequel. So really excited to start talking about that. And can't wait.
Yeah, we'll catch you next time. Thank you for listening.
Bye-bye.
Bye.